The Democratic field for next year's run for governor in Maryland is getting crowded. This is Don Rush. Among the candidates is Mike Rosenbaum, a Baltimore entrepreneur whose companies provide assistance and training for employment in the tech and healthcare industries. He also served as an economist in the Clinton administration. We caught up with him during a visit to the Eastern Shore. Why have we decided to run for governor, especially given the fact that this is a pretty crowded field? Some fairly prominent names are in the running on the Democratic side.
It is true. Half the registered voters in the state are running in the Democratic primary. So I've spent my life working on the issue that talent's everywhere and opportunity isn't. And I've started two companies in Maryland, and I've lived in Maryland pretty much my whole life. Started two companies in Maryland that are both designed to enable pathways to economic security for everyone. The first company, Catalyte, identifies folks who would be great in tech, but haven't had the opportunity to do it, provides economic support and training and move folks into tech jobs. The second company does something similar in healthcare. In the first company, the average income on someone's last job is $25,000 a year. The average income 5 years later is $98,000 a year. The second company is filling 100,000 jobs a year or so in healthcare. And before COVID hit, I had been coming to the conclusion that the world's moving the wrong direction. I've spent my whole life working on the issue that if we can't create pathways of economic security for everyone, then societies fall apart. But more importantly, if we solve that problem, we solve almost all of our other problems. Then COVID hit, exposed all the bad stuff that was already there and accelerated it, but also created an appetite for something bigger and more important, and a more transformative approach towards creating jobs and pathways to jobs in the state. And what I realized was that political figures don't have an incentive to be bold. Because there's an incentive to win re-election or get the next job, that folks who have been thinking about running for office for a long time or have been running for office for a long time have an incentive to do small programs around the edges and not fundamentally rethink what we're doing. And the reality is what we've been doing doesn't work. But if we reinvest and we change significant amounts of capital around in our state budget, we can actually create pathways of economic security for everyone. And I am the only one in the race who actually has experience doing that.
So you talk about switching around priorities. What kind of priorities would you shift around? What would you take out from one piece of the budget and put to another? And in addition to which, then how do you accomplish that, given the fact that we, as you say, we have a state legislature which is elected, has its own vested interests, represents local interests? How do you do it?
Most of the state budget today, like most other states, is dedicated to the symptoms of problems rather than the causes of those problems. So I'll give you an example. So the state spends a little north of $50 billion a year. That's the state budget. Of that budget, we spend something like $12 billion a year on healthcare for folks who are severely poor. We spend almost nothing to help folks not be poor. That is such a massive amount of money that we actually could hire everyone in the state who's pushed out of the workforce and unemployed if we wanted to, give health insurance and give enough money for everyone to develop training so that folks could move into a middle-income job and would create space for each of us to be able to breathe and eat while we develop those skills and the resources to actually develop those skills. And I've been going around the state talking to elected officials and to different interest groups and to union leaders, and I'm finding an incredible amount of interest and recognition in the fact that what we've been doing doesn't work. And the fact that actually the dollars are already there in the state budget, but what it requires is it requires someone who's willing to do bold, controversial things. It requires someone who isn't looking for re-election or the next job, but instead just wants to solve the issue. And with that, actually there is support to fundamentally rethink how we structure our state's economy to create those pathways.
Let me just briefly drill down on this. So we have this amount of money that we provide for health care. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that we should get rid of that and invest it somewhere else? I mean, what is it? I mean, because it sounds like you're going to take that piece of the budget and then spend it somewhere else. But what do you mean by that?
So as the fall rolls on, I'm going to actually be rolling out very specific policy proposals about what I'm suggesting. But at a high level, I'll tease it a bit, which is that almost all of the money that we spend is really around the symptoms of not having pathways to economic security. We have a whole bunch of programs in the state and in the country that really were developed in the 60s when we had a different kind of economy. And they were developed for very good reasons and for very well-intentioned reasons. But I've lived in Baltimore City pretty much my whole adult life. And I moved to Baltimore to start my first company, originally because there was a GM plant and a Bethlehem Steel plant there. And the GM plant and the Bethlehem Steel plant, in partnership with organized labor, had provided pathways into the middle class for wide swaths of society. But those jobs were going away. And so the question is, what's next? And that's why I started a company that was designed to find folks who would have been working for the GM plant and the Bethlehem Steel plant two generations earlier, but weren't because those jobs had gone away, and instead were in jobs like cashier or pushed out of the workforce, but would be great in tech, then provide economic support and training and move folks into tech jobs. And that was why I moved to Baltimore in the first place. But if you think about in the 60s, you know, if I didn't have a college degree and I worked at the GM plant, GM would invest in training for me over the course of my career because I'd worked there for 40 years. And over the course of 40 years, the GM plant could recoup the investment in that training. Today, if the typical amount of time I work in a job is 2 or 3 years, a company doesn't have the time to recoup that investment. And as a result, companies don't invest as much in training. And those pathways don't exist as much. Today in the state, we talk a lot about the minimum wage. And the minimum wage is critically important. But whether the job, whether the minimum wage is $12 an hour or $15 an hour or $20 an hour, it's still long-term poverty in most parts of Maryland. And it's one thing to make that amount for a certain number of years, but if I'm still making that amount 30 years later, there's a problem. And that is at its essence, the problem that we need to solve. And it's the most important thing we can invest money in. So that's why I'm suggesting that these systems need to be rethought so that we can invest in people to create those pathways.
We'll turn to the Eastern Shore because the question obviously for a lot of folks here is, you know, what are you going to do for us? And there does seem to be a conflict between the urban areas, which have their own interests and their own needs, such as mass transit, say, as opposed to, say, the rural areas, such out here, where we need roads. How do you balance those two? How do we guarantee that the rural areas in particular, where most of the votes are not, aren't going to be left behind?
So my first company, Catalyte, has drawn folks from every county in the state, including, obviously, lots of folks on the Eastern Shore. And when we think about areas and neighborhoods and communities that have been undervalued, which is at its core what Catalyte, my first company, and Arena, my second company, work on, you know, the Eastern Shore is a classic example of this. And, you know, in the state, historically, we've had a significant focus on the 95 corridor. And yet what that focus has prevented us from doing is in taking the assets of the state as a whole and being competitive globally. So when we think about the fact that we don't pay as much attention to Western Maryland or the Eastern Shore or the northern part of the state or Southern Maryland, you know, it's a relatively narrow area. And because of that, we don't leverage the assets that exist everywhere. So on the Eastern Shore, we have a significant number of healthcare providers, for example. Those healthcare providers have a whole bunch of middle-income jobs. And in Maryland, we have a higher unemployment rate than 34 other states. So, you know, we're worse than the middle. At the same time, we have lots of open jobs. Healthcare is one of the areas where we have lots of open jobs. The investments that we can make in enabling pathways for everyone to move into a middle-income job, you know, are particularly important in the areas of our state where we've been, where we've undervalued them historically. And the Eastern Shore is right at the top of that list.
In terms of COVID, if you were elected governor, it looks as if you're going to be still struggling with that, perhaps, certainly with the Delta variant and who knows what comes afterwards. How would you deal with that issue? And would you consider, for instance, things like mask mandates? And how would you approach the issue of vaccines and so on? Those are issues particularly that seem to strike at the heart of people's sensitivities about what they're willing to do and what they're not willing to do.
Absolutely. So, no one likes masks. So I have a 15-year-old daughter, and she just finished, she's starting her 10th grade year. So she started a new school last year, and her whole 9th grade year was, you know, in COVID. And all she wanted this year, the only thing she wanted was a normal 10th grade year. That's all she wanted. And to see her face over the last month as the variant has accelerated and, you know, it's turning out that her year is not going to be as normal as she was hoping is just devastating. And I think many of us have had those kinds of experiences. But when we think about public health generally, one of the things that I think the governor's done particularly well is rely on health leaders and scientists to figure out how to think about the policies that we should be rolling out so that we're all safe. And I give them a lot of credit for that. I think that there are some opportunities, frankly, to work with faith communities and community organizations to ensure the vaccines are delivered more pervasively to areas where folks want them and need them. But I think that he's done a good job with that. I think there's a bigger opportunity, though, because the reality is this isn't going to last forever. But this will happen again at some point. And the question is, what we've seen during this pandemic is not only the public health impacts of it, but the disparate impacts in every sense of that. The disparate impacts to schools, the disparate impacts to families, the disparate impacts to jobs. And coming out of this pandemic, we have a window of opportunity where there is an appetite for fundamentally rethinking how we structure our state's economy and how we structure the systems that tie into that, healthcare, education, criminal justice. And the way these systems fit together and the way that we actually, as one of the richest states in the richest country in the entire world, the fact that we have the resources and the opportunity to ensure economic security for everyone in a way that will make sure that the next time this happens, we don't have all of the effects that we've had this time, is our opportunity. And that's really what the next governor needs to be able to do.
Before I get to my final question, one quick follow-up on that. Would you be willing to impose those kinds of mandates, such as mask mandates? And how do you get people to sign up to be vaccinated, those who are resistant? I mean, this is a serious issue, which obviously, you know, President Biden deals with, but a state's governor has to deal with on a very practical level. I mean, we've seen other states where they've taken different tacks and we've seen that rise, right? How far are you willing to go to reach in to affect people to say, yeah, you have to wear a mask, or yeah, business is going to require you to have, say, be vaccinated?
I think that the reality is that over the next couple of years, you know, we're going to have ups and downs of this. And depending on where we are and how many breakthroughs there are, right, there are going to be different policies that we're going to need to put in place at the time. And that's why we are so fortunate to have universities here on the Eastern Shore and on the Western Shore, you know, where we have academic leaders and scientists and health leaders who really can guide us in this. And I do think the state's done a pretty good job at this. I think the interesting question is why is there so much resistance to vaccines, to mask mandates, you know, when they're appropriate? The reality is, I think that it comes from a history of, you know, of many communities being ignored. And when I say many communities being ignored, I'm talking about resistance to vaccines among communities that have a bad history over a very long period of time of impacts of vaccines. I'm talking about, frankly, communities that have been overlooked by the economy, where if I feel like the systems that exist in the world don't help me, I'm going to be awfully resistant, you know, when someone in a position of authority says, you have to do this thing. And I think that that's a symptom of the fact that we haven't rethought our systems. We haven't really rethought them in so many decades. And the world is in a different place. And as a result, we have so many communities that struggle and are overlooked by, and when I say systems, it sounds like a really general statement. Obviously, you're talking about the government, but you're also talking about the deal we all make as a society to live together. You know, how do we think about healthcare? How do we think about education? You know, how do we think about jobs? And the fact that we have not ensured that everyone has a pathway to at least a middle-income job, I think has a direct connection to things like mask mandates, because, you know, I don't feel like anyone's looking out for me, because what I really need is economic security and a job that pays at least $30 an hour.
Finally, as we mentioned a moment ago, this is a very crowded field. Mm-hmm. Lots of heavy hitters. We've had people amassing large war chests and this. Why do you think that you have a shot at winning the Democratic primary?
So I have been a business person in this state for decades, and I have alums in every nook and cranny of this state of Catalyte and Arena. And those validators are in a place where, you know, where to be able to say, I used to work as a cashier and I made $25,000 a year. And now I make six figures. I have a house. I have a retirement account. And that is possible. Allows me to speak differently. Everyone else in this field is a political figure. Everyone else in this field has either been thinking about running for office for a long time or has been running for office for a long time. And as a result, everyone sort of sounds the same. They sound variations of the same. But what that means is that to have a different voice and to be able to say that this is what is possible and have a track record of executing on that, to have a track record of creating jobs and thousands of jobs and pathways into those jobs in this state is at its core what the next governor needs to be able to accomplish. There's no one else in this field who has the track record I have or the ability to execute that I can bring to the table.
Mike Rosenbaum, a Baltimore entrepreneur who served as an economist in the Clinton administration. This is Don Rush for Delmarva Public Media.